This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehisu Hib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have seen a decline in the number of tests for tuberculosis. We've seen a decline in the number of patients coming in to get their medications. It could undo the years of work that it has taken us to get to this point.
That's South African epidemiologist Salim S. Abdul Karim speaking about the impact of coronavirus on the treatment of other diseases. Details coming up. Also, in Zimbabwe, nurses have been on strike for about 2 months with no resolution on the way. And Mozambique government says fighting is ongoing near the troubled and gas-rich port city of Mokimboa da Praia. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Here is our top story. In the midst of COVID-19 pandemic, Zimbabwe's health sector remains fragile. Among the challenges, shortages of medicine supplies and personal protective equipment, and healthcare workers who say their incomes have eroded dramatically. Nurses have been on strike for about 2 months, but there seems to be no resolution on the way. Kudzai Zenawashi has the details.
Public hospital parking lots are not packed the way they were in the past. That's because patients are being turned away. Doctors on duty are overwhelmed and unmotivated, while nurses haven't been coming to work for nearly 2 months as they strike for better working conditions and salaries paid in US dollars. Recently, government administrators removed striking nurses from the payroll. Enoch Dongo is the president of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association.
Yes, it's true. They were removed in July. They didn't receive their July salary, and we are not sure whether they're going to also receive their August salary. That's the stance that the government decided to take to remove all those nurses that are on strike.
The nurses struck off the payroll also did not receive the 50% salary increment and the $75 COVID allowance that was given to civil servants. Zimbabwe's economy has been in a long decline, with shortages of goods such as medical supplies, fuel and food. The national currency has collapsed in value and inflation is running at more than 700% a year. For more than a year, nurses and other medical workers have said their salaries, paid in the Zimbabwean RTGS currency, doesn't cover their costs of getting to work and held intermittent strikes. The nurses and the government are not holding talks. The government has tried to paint the nurses' strike as a political tactic, but Dongo rejects that.
It's a genuine cause, and which needs a genuine negotiation, genuine discussion, not an intimidatory way of solving it, because removing those nurses from the payroll looks like a government is saying what they did is illegal. Nurses are totally incapacitated. Nurses are failing to go to environment where it is not safe without the proper and adequate PPEs. And those are genuine issues which need to be looked at.
Dr. Nomen Matara is with the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights. He says the absence of nurses is causing a crisis.
We are having a very big crisis in our hospitals at the moment. The main reason is that nurses are on strike. So this has left our hospitals with very, very minimal capacity to handle patients because you cannot admit patients when you do not have nurses. You cannot go into theater and operate on a patient when there are no nurses to eventually monitor that patient, to provide medication and drugs, and to carry on vital monitoring.
Dongo says intimidation will not work as the nurses remain resolute in their demands. He adds a good nurse is one who is motivated, financially stable, and not stressed about their daily expenses. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zenawashi from Harare.
Doctors are warning that the global death toll from the disease like tuberculosis, malaria, and HIV could increase sharply this year because of disruption to health services caused by the coronavirus pandemic. One report warns that the malaria deaths in Africa could double in 2020. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
TB cases and deaths have fallen year on year in South Africa and many other countries, but it remains one of the world's biggest killers, with an estimated 1.5 million deaths last year. Dr. Finn McQuaid is at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
International mental health experts agree that the psychological wounds of the COVID-19 pandemic will persist for a long time. In South Africa, there's concern for the mental health of hospital staff members. They have to treat thousands of ill and sometimes dying patients while battling the fear of being infected themselves. Darren Taylor reports.
More and more of Johannesburg psychiatrist Antoinette Murich's patients are doctors and nurses who are anxious and depressed. She says they're expected to lead the so-called war on COVID-19. Yet, even months into the fight, some of them don't have adequate personal protective equipment or PPE to shield them from infection.
The only way we can get to ask more of our healthcare workers is if we're giving them what they need from the basic safety levels, then we can ask them to fight. The capping at 7 o'clock every night has been great, but just give me PPE. You don't need to go clap.
Psychologist Sama Mbele sees many healthcare workers who are lonely.
In the reality, a lot of people have had to move out of their homes because of the fear of actually contaminating and are literally living by themselves.
Infections and deaths are spiking in South Africa. Included in those are many doctors, nurses, and other hospital staff. Mbele says some survivors have developed post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
The people who are exhibiting the most stress responses are people who tested positive, had to isolate, had treatment, experienced symptoms, and also had the stigma there when they were trying to reintegrate.
PTSD after major epidemics is well documented by scientific studies, for example, after the global SARS virus in the early 2000s.
The terror of having to test positive, the horror of the treatment, and then also the discrimination of stigma, those three things, when they come together, can have a much longer term effect that we're going to see towards the end of the year, next year.
Mbele says PTSD is difficult to treat.
It can actually be quite intractable, and it leaves a psychic wound season on season. So we need to be attentive to that right now.
By being attentive, the psychologist means getting healthcare workers into counseling. The problem, says Mbele, especially in poorer countries, is that such services are sparse and sometimes even non-existent. So, he says, the reality is that the world is going to be seeing more people in the near future with a lot of mental health issues because of the trauma caused by COVID-19. Yet according to Cassie Chambers of the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, good has also sprung from the pandemic.
One of the magic things that have come out of COVID, the Healthcare Workers Care Network has been established, providing a safe space, providing free mental health support to all healthcare workers. So if you work in the kitchen, you're a porter, you're a home-based care worker, you're a doctor or nurse, you would have access to free mental health services. And that includes a helpline.
She says COVID-19 has unified South Africa's mental health community like never before.
The amazing thing is that we've had over 500 mental health professionals, from psychiatrists to GPs to psychologists and social workers and counselors, who volunteered to help their colleagues.
Her group also plans to help hospitals establish COVID-19 mental health response units. These special teams will focus on preventing healthcare workers from collapsing rather than treating breakdowns. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Mozambique's government says fighting is ongoing near the strategic port of Mokimboa da Praia in the country's troubled and gas-rich north. Earlier this week, Islamist rebels captured the port and navy barracks there. Journalist Yannick Michel in Maputo tells VOA's Jason Patinkin that the authorities are struggling to explain what happened.
Contrary to yesterday's information on scene, the government came to refute the allegations. that the Navy barracks and the port of Mocimboa da Praia have been taken by the insurgents. But it is a known fact by everyone here that these occurrences are true.
Did the government offer any evidence to support their claims?
Not at all. No evidence, no proof, because they were supposed to at least allow media staff to go there and make some footage of the port as well of the Navy barracks, but no proof, no real proof, only the sayings by the government itself. But in the midst of all this, one thing is true and is for certain. The town itself has not been taken by the insurgents, only the Navy barracks and the port. These are the two major and important infrastructure that have already been taken. They also said that there are ongoing combat within the town in certain spots, isolated spots, because many of the insurgents are disguised as civilians. But the government did not specify the exact spots in which the confrontations are taking place.
Now, how are Mozambican citizens reacting to the government's handling of this situation?
It's a general disappointment that possesses most of Mozambican citizens. But as for us, we are already used to government not assuming their defeats.
Are there any other statements from authorities about what's going on?
The Minister of Defense yesterday said that there is no possibility of announcing or declaring a siege state. But the local police today issued a document saying that it's forbidden for people to walk around before 6 a.m. and 8 and 6 p.m. So there is a contradictory information within the government itself. The local government says one thing. The central government, through the Ministry of Defense, says another thing.
That was journalist Yannick Michel speaking with my VOA colleague Jason Patinkin. United Nations experts have accused senior army and intelligence officials in Mali of deliberately obstructing a 2015 peace accord meant to bring peace for the war-torn country. The revelations appear in an expert report delivered to the UN Security Council on August 7th, which the French news agency AFP has obtained. Mali is in the grip of a political crisis as a broad opposition movement demands President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita step down. The opposition accuses Keita's government of failing to tackle insecurity and of corruption and nepotism. Cameroonian rights group and opposition political parties have accused the military of excessive force and arbitrary mass arrests in the troubled Anglophone regions as they reach for culprits in a series of recent killings. Cameroonian authorities reject the accusations and have called for locals to support the military to root out rebels who they blame for a gruesome beheading shown on social media. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Military forces arrested several hundred people in Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions this week as they searched for those behind the killing of at least 13 civilians in the regions, including 8 workers. Public sentiment was inflamed when videos of beheaded women and civilians stabbed or shot to death were shared on social media. The government blames separatist forces for the deaths, and the U.S. Embassy in Yaoundé on Friday condemned what it called the horrific and senseless attacks by armed separatist fighters. However, Prince Ekosso, president of the opposition United Socialist Democratic Party, says the arrests are an overreaction of the killings.
The people of Southwest and Northwest cannot continue to suffer like this. It is not supposed to be a collective arrest. It is supposed to be a systematic investigation so that they can find the culprits and bring them to book. You don't go and punish an innocent people for the crime of another person.
27-year-old Prudence Egbe says on Thursday of this week, the military raided several neighborhoods in Muyuka, a southwestern town. She says after forcefully searching their family house and finding nothing that could implicate anyone, the military still left with her older brother who drives a motorcycle and accused him of aiding the separatists.
They torture him. They beat him up that he's carrying amber boys. Whereas I, for one, I know that he's not even involved in such act. What he does is he carry people to the market and bring them back. Since they arrested him, we don't even know what he's going through.
The government acknowledged that people were arrested in Muyuka, but did not give details. Muyuka is where separatist fighters killed B. Blanche Chi, a 35-year-old mother of four, for allegedly being an informant for government forces. In a video circulated on social media, the woman pleads her innocence before her throat is cut with a machete. Bernard Okalia Bilai, governor of the English-speaking Southwest region where Muyuka is located, denies the population is being brutalized. He says civilians are happy that the military is out to save their lives from barbaric fighters.
The population are reacting positively now. They are collaborating with the forces of law and order to denounce those who are disturbing their territory.
Similar mass arrests and torture of civilians has been reported in towns in the northwest region where two teachers, a humanitarian worker and a 30-year-old girl were killed. Since 2016, separatists have fought to split the northwest and southwest regions where the predominant language is English from the rest of Cameroon and its French-speaking majority. The four-year conflict has killed more than 3,000 people and displaced 500,000 others, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Ethiopia's Tigray's People Liberation Front, or TPLF, which ruled the country for 3 decades until 2018, has vowed to hold its own regional vote. But the national government says doing so would violate the constitution. The TPLF made its declaration after the government delayed this year's national election, citing the coronavirus pandemic. The standoff is increasing the risk of conflict, with the Tigray region holding military parades and refusing to back down. Simon Marks reports from Addis Ababa.
Just weeks after more than 230 people were killed following the assassination of singer and activist Hachalu Hundessa, a hero to young Ethiopians calling for reform, another potential flashpoint is emerging in Africa's second most populous country. The Tigray People's Liberation Front, which last year decided to split from the ruling party coalition led by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, accuses the government of grabbing power by delaying the national election indefinitely. The government says it would be irresponsible to hold an election while the coronavirus pandemic gathers pace. The dispute has created a legal quagmire, with both sides accusing each other of defying the law. While the government and national parliament have said it is illegal to conduct any vote without the involvement of the National Election Board, the Tigray region has relied on constitutional articles providing it with rights of self-determination. Since taking power in 2018, the Prime Minister has overseen reforms promising to liberalize the economy and embark on a new era of democracy. He has, however, struggled to reduce demands for autonomy coming from areas with strong ethnic undertones. Fissa Haile Tzion, a TPLF Central Committee member, spoke with VOA via a messaging app.
Elections must be held every 5 years. Both for the national lawmaking bodies, for the regional and even local level lawmaking bodies. It's what the constitution says, but the federal government is bringing the coronavirus threat pandemic as a pretext to delay the election and to hold on to power indefinitely.
Asked about the potential for military intervention should plans for the regional vote go forward, Fissa has said he thought his region had enough in its arsenal to defend itself. A government spokesperson provided VOA with a statement saying that Prime Minister Abiy has raised concerns of unconstitutional unilateral actions being undertaken by the government in the Tigray region. He has also called for the enforcement of rule of law for actions being taken against the constitution, while simultaneously underlying that the government has no desire to take armed measures against belligerent regional governments. Marishit Mohamed Hamza, a postgraduate student at the Geneva Academy of International Humanitarian Law and Human Rights, said both sides were not acting within the confines of the law and urged them to find a political solution.
Both governments are trying to use the law to attack each other so that the other side will be depicted as violator of the constitution. But on the ground, none of them, I would say, have constitutional basis when it comes to election. For me, what has to be done is that both have to come to the table and discuss and respect each other.
Campaigning began in the Tigray region Wednesday, although no date has been announced for the vote. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Botswana says it will review compensation fees for damage to farmers caused by wildlife. The Southern African country is battling an increase in human-wildlife conflict, resulting in crop destruction, injury, or even death of people. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana parliamentarians say this need to review compensation fees for damages from wild animals in light of growing human-wildlife conflicts. In recent years, 45 people have been trampled to death by elephants, whose population is at more than 130,000 against the holding capacity of 55,000. Responding to questions in Parliament Thursday, Education Minister Ronald Shamugani, standing in for the Environment and Wildlife Minister, said the government will review the compensation figures.
I wish to inform the House that the Ministry is currently reviewing compensation guidelines of 2013 with a view to increase compensable species and the rate for damages caused by such animals.
Shamukani said compensation will be for damage caused by wild animal species considered dangerous.
There are other species that cause substantive damage. We only compensate for damage caused by animals that render farmers unable to adequately protect themselves from their properties.
Farmers like Edwin Leroli believe the compensation fee should be linked to market rates.
We have plenty of dangerous animals. They injure people and kill our animals. You lose a bull with 30,000 pula and the government compensates you 3,000 pula. It doesn't work.
Local conservationist Bonface Kiakabetsu asked the government to consider compensation for injuries caused to people by wildlife.
Is that at the moment, government actually compensate the relatives of the people who are killed by wildlife? But when you are injured, there's nothing that government does. So if they actually introduce that people who get injuries, then they could be covered. Then I think that will be better.
Botswana reintroduced safari hunting last year, a move the government said it was meant to ensure communities reap financial benefits from wildlife. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.